I am Dean Williams, D-E-A-N-W-I, excuse me, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, and I am the Commissioner for Corrections.
Well, Dean, let's just kind of get the obvious question out of the way. Now that you've been confirmed, what goes forward with you? What kind of things were you putting on hold with the Department of Corrections that you can kind of move forward with now that the confirmation process is over?
Well, there's several things. I mean, I've started some things even before the confirmation process is over, but it's certainly a different sky. And once that process is over, so I appreciate the support I got from the legislature on that. It was sort of a difficult process, but I appreciate the vote of confidence from the legislature. There's several things going forward, though. I think there's several things that are really critical. One is making sure that I secure the right team for the department. And I've started doing that already. And we're going to continue to do that to make sure that we have people that are have the right skill set, come up to the ranks. And so going forward, the deputy commissioner position I've picked with Claire Sullivan, the director, Bruce Busby, these are people that were COs, came right up to the ranks, lead their facilities with great skill sets. So that's the first thing. And that's kind of an important step, is making sure that I have the right team. There's a lot of things that I, that we're going to start now working on more earnest in terms of, now that I know that I'm in the seat for good, which is the policy reviews and the improvement of the policies and all those things. The other thing I'm going to move forward on is the standing up of the internal affairs unit, or the professional conduct unit, because that unit is very important to analyzing, investigating when things go wrong, not just catching employees doing something wrong. That's not the, that is one piece of it, but the major focus is to really make sure that you document well when things go wrong. And so those are several items that I'm going to work on here and have been working on, but really now going to, go after it full force.
Yeah. I've got one little technical issue. You're not wearing like a jacket that's close to your face or anything, maybe? Is there anything kind of in the way of you and the phone?
No, I don't think so. I'm sorry, my throat is a little scratchy though.
I'm just getting a little bit of popping. Okay. Maybe if just hold the receiver like an extra inch away.
I'll hold it back just a smidge
touch.
Back.
Okay. We might have a really sensitive connection here.
Okay.
So I'll be honest, I read the review, and when I read the review, I was surprised that the Correctional Officers Association came out against it the way they did, because your review seemed very restrained, quite frankly. Can you talk a little bit more frankly now about some of the things that you saw when researching your report, when working together with Mr. Hanlon, some of the problems that aren't going to inform the work that you're going to be doing?
Well, I'll answer that with this caveat. My entire focus going forward and letting, I had a job with the governor to do a report. I did it as fairly and as comprehensively with Joe Hanlon. We both knew that this was a review, not an investigation. We weren't investigating every single incident in that review. We were reviewing how the department was doing the investigations or not. And so with the review, you don't look at the you're as much looking at how a department is handling problems and things that occur. And so for me, there's been a sort of a misunderstanding, I think, about what a review is. It's not, you're not looking at every specific case the same way if you were a police officer investigating them. But with that caveat, let me answer it this way. There were, I was working very closely with the union on the review as it started. And by the way, side note, the union met with us today, my team today, to discuss issues going forward. So on day one, we are starting the work of going forward together. That's what really matters to me the most. I can't explain some of the sort of, the high pitch that developed over this. I think part of it was that here I was doing the review, and now I've become the commissioner. When I was doing the review, I had no clue that there was a remote possibility that I was going to be the commissioner. That wasn't even in the equation for me. The entire focus was, is there something, what is happening that's making it difficult? If there was any criticism, it wasn't, was never of what was with the people or personnel, especially correction officers doing the work, who were doing a very demanding job. There was no vilifying or taking down of any of the correction officers. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done that, and we didn't do that. So that a lot of people who have turned it into that, I regret that, but that wasn't me, and it wasn't Joe Hanlon, and it was others who were making a lot of loose comments, you know, I think in the public, et cetera. But that just comes with the territory. For me, I was the most sympathetic in many ways to the staff that were in a very tough situation when we have too many prisoners and not enough staff, when there's problems in the medical department, when training seems non-existent, when policies are very outdated. I mean, you've taken a very difficult job for staff and made it even more difficult. So a lot of my sympathies were with what the staff were having to deal with. And so I was, you know, I knew it was going to be a rough road kind of getting through that. But I think we are. And I'm ready to move on. And like I said, we are meeting with Union Day, going over issues today. A very friendly meeting, progress made on things and resolving things. And so my hope is that things, you know, go better, and I'm the same person today as I was on Friday, and it's about going forward and doing the right thing for the department and being highly inclusive of bringing people in to help solve the problem. Though that's going to be really important.
So one of the things that I kind of observed, I think, after reading the report, you know, we kind of know that first responders, people who do the dirty work in our society, they kind of have, you got to stick together. You got to keep each other, you know, bring each other up. And so something like this, you can understand that there would be, I guess I could understand that there would be some outlash. But when you're talking about the Department of Corrections and what you've described in your report, really just sounds like it needs a complete change of culture. Would it be fair to say that part of that change in culture means that people who feel like they aren't getting trained up to par or that they don't have the tools for their job feel empowered to speak up, perhaps?
Part of the, first of all, I'm not sure that, I mean, there are some places, and I have visited many facilities where there things are going along amazingly well. I mean,
I understand.
Reason why I picked Bruce and Claire, to be quite frank, is that their facilities are just humming, and other places are struggling a little bit more. I guess that is a culture change and where it's not going well, and how do we make things go well? But there has been a lot of trauma in this department, I think, and I've had many discussions with COs and many staff over these last couple months, but even before that as well. And there was a fear of coming forward and articulating and talking about what the problems were and what's not going right. They were afraid they're going to get in trouble themselves, that the administration, department, you know, the administration would somehow, I don't know, make life difficult for them. I mean, there's a real fear. And part of going forward is to say, look, we're gonna tell the truth to each other. I've promised legislators unannounced visits to facilities. We're not doing the things that have happened in the past where we know people are coming and everybody starts to look, you know, squared away and looking like things are going great. We need to be real honest about what's going well. There's a lot of things going well, but when it's not going well, we need to be real honest about that. We're not doing anyone by any favors by, you know, running over that like it's nothing. And so part of that is for me and my team to set the example that, you know, doggone it, you know, we're going to talk about things as they are. And give a vision for where we want them to go. But I've had a great deal of encouragement from people. There's a lot of people that have come forward to my staff, to Bruce and Claire, and to me personally, saying we have been waiting for people to get honest about where we're at. There's very, very good people in the department, but we have some troubles. We have systemically, things have kind of gone downhill in the last decade. It's not my observation. Just talk to almost any staff. Their training has gone down. There's shortage of staffing. There's policies are out of date. People feel like they can't bring problems to their leadership. That's not a good recipe. And I'll mention again, the other thing of standing up internal affairs or this professional conduct unit is it forces the system, it forces administrators to acknowledge that there might be a problem, and you start to develop this, systemic way of addressing problems. And so you have to develop a sort of a corrective action plan. Every time something goes happen, what's the corrective action to that incident? And then you all start to sign off on it. And I've seen what other states have done about this. It's really good. I quote Wyoming a lot of times. They have 2,500 prisoners, and they have about 13 investigators with another handful of support staff. Their recidivism rate is 25%. They do evidence-based programs. We do evidence-based programs. The one prominent thing I can see different between them and us is when it comes to, like, when something bad happens in the facility, man, they just document the heck out of it. And it's because they want to know what happened, what went wrong. So their prisons are safer. Sure, they have fights and incidents like that, but they're documented and they get investigated fairly. And they've done something significant there, and that's why I'm looking closely at the work they've done, and as well as other states.
Now, talking about documenting incidents as much as they possibly can, the department still has some liabilities hanging out there with some of the recent deaths that have taken place.
Sure.
Now we've got, I think, the Kelsey Green family, I believe, that's come forward with a lawsuit. There's still a few other families who imaginably could step forward against the Department of Corrections. What are your concerns regarding some of that possibility? Are there any internal conversations going on about how to deal with that?
Well, sure. And while I, of course, can't comment on any of the specific cases, knowing that there's a lawsuit, coming forward, but that shouldn't mean we shouldn't be talking to the families and communicating to them when things go wrong. I've talked to Mr. Green several times. Mr. Green was very supportive of my confirmation, even though he's filed a lawsuit against us over the death of his daughter. I have great respect for who Mr. Green is, and the loss of his daughter, the death of his daughter in one of our facilities is heartbreaking. It just is. There's no other. I've said in previous interviews, how do I feel about it? Hey, I feel about it. It's unacceptable. It's unacceptable to me, and I'm sure it's unacceptable to the governor. It's unacceptable to anybody about that would happen. So correcting that is I know the task ahead of me. It's not easy, but there's one thing you can do when bad things happen, and that is to get honest about it and to reach out to families when things go wrong. And that is, if you look at sort of research and even on malpractice cases, is when families are dealt with respectfully, even when things are a bad result has occurred. The trust is at least established, when that happens. The worst thing to do is to duck and cover and not even, try to acknowledge the fact that there was a problem or that, what the incident was about, and talk with the families even before the lawsuit is filed and try to address the issues. I think Mr. Green, I like Mr. Green personally, and his case to make sure this doesn't happen to anybody else, guess what? I agree with him 100%. I don't want it to happen to anybody else either. I wouldn't want that to, I have a daughter too. I wouldn't want that to happen. Or so I think how we handle families, even when bad things do happen, makes a difference. And everything I've read about, even in terms of the liability, the financial liability for the state, goes better. But that's my concern is way beyond that. I'm concerned about the financial liability of the state, of course. But I got to tell you, my concern is to diminish as much as possible the risk of it happening again.
Commissioner, I'm gonna ask you a personal question, and please just tell me if it's too much for you. But do you actually know anyone, have a close friend or a family member who is involved with the justice system in some way? And if so, how is that gonna inform what you do moving forward with some of these issues?
Well, I've known people that have dabbled in and out of the justice system in a minor way. So I don't have like close personal relationships with anyone sort of occupying one of my cells right now inside the facility. Though I do recognize some individuals, let's say that, they recognize me from the juvenile system who are now in the adult system. So I guess I don't know that even if I did, though, how would that inform me on a personal level? I'm about as, I went, the governor sent me to visit the family of Larry Kobuk, for example, and St. Michael. You can't spend an hour with these folks, and I spent several hours with them out in the village of St. Michael talking about what happened, actually showing them the video. You can't go through that experience and not have it affect you personally. Or if it doesn't, you better have your pulse checked, because these are people that, yes, there's people in jail that are hardcore criminals that need to be in jail a long time, and they scare me and they scare you. And for heaven's sakes, let's not kid ourselves. There's some bad people in the world, and I'm glad they're locked up. But there's another group of people that are on the fringe, and they're having a really bad day, and they made a really bad decision, or they have a really bad addiction. And they're doing things they normally wouldn't do if they didn't have that addiction. Those are the people that you can impact, and those are the people you can reach, and those are the people that you need to give another chance to. I think of Kelsey Green. Mr. Green has been very honest about the fact that she was a heroin addict, but man, she needed another chance. You know, she needed another chance to straighten up and to clean up, and hopefully get treatment, and so she could, be in a spot where she could later apologize for all the things she did and make amends. So our job is to provide opportunities for people to make amends. Some people you're never going to get to, and like I said, they should be locked up for as long as we can keep them locked up, because they've done very bad things, and they're dangerous, and they're not changing. But there's a whole bunch of people that are getting in trouble that they've just had a really, really bad day, and they made a really bad choice, and they'll come out of it. And I think I have, certainly there's friends of mine who have been down that road who said, man, what I did in my 20s, I can't believe it. Thank goodness I'm here now. I'm over here now. Our job is to give people time to get to the place where they can make a decision to do something different. So, well, I may not be closely associated with anyone in the system right now, at least I'm not. Maybe they are, and I just don't know. I've seen very good people, and actually someone who worked for me not so long ago made just a really dumb mistake, and this person had never been in trouble in their life. And they were traumatized because they realized how they'd screwed up. The worst thing we could have done is over-involve them in the system. They made amends. They paid restitution. They'll never be in trouble again. And those are the people that we have to recognize that could be any one of us who have a really, really, really bad day. So I've been in this business a long time. You can't be in this business without having some personal connection. And most of the people that are in this business, by the way, they do have that same feeling. There's a reason why they're here. They love this work because they're looking to give people a second and third and fourth chance.
So that kind of, and I know we're getting a little tight on time here, but I do want to cover two more things here. Kind of, you touched on this when you're talking about people who don't need to be over-involved in the system, some with regards to, we're going to look at mental illness, also alcohol and substance abuse problems. To keep those people out of the justice system, it almost seems like, or to at least find them their, you know, to keep them unnecessarily out of the justice system, seems like there would need to be some kind of collaboration between, say, the Department of Corrections and, like, the Department of Health and Social Services, that there should be some real strong understanding between the two of those departments. Is there any talk of the Department of Corrections branching out and trying to collaborate with other departments on how to make this a better system?
This is making sure the departments are coordinating their efforts is absolute concern of the governor. It's a concern of mine, and I don't want to totally redirect your question because I think that cooperation among departments is hugely important, and we meet on this regularly, even through Senate Bill 91. We keep talking about, hey, you know, this goes across departments, this issue. How are we going to work on that together? That's why I'm really thrilled that Walt Monaghan is coming back to be Commissioner of Public Safety. I've known Walt for years. There's an opportunity between his department and mine to forge a new sort of relationship and thing and cooperation, and there's a lot of things together I think that's going to help. But I have to tell you, I'll take it one step further. The partnership, not just between departments, but the community, I'm hoping to make a meeting with the opioid task force that's meeting out in the valley tomorrow, assuming my schedule doesn't go sideways. But those folks are doing a lot of work on a very frontline level, and I want to be maximally responsive to them, and I want communities to know that we're going to do business with them. And I'm already starting to push the department in areas. I'm like, who's doing supervising of our probationees? Why are we the only ones doing that? Who else can do that in particular ways? And it is being done, and some VPSOs are doing supervision, but I want to increase the partnerships that we have, including some of the work. And so if somebody else can do some of that work better than us, why wouldn't we consider that? Mm-hmm. So I agree that the cooperation between departments is important. But I really want partnerships with local communities, local tribes, native villages, and towns and communities, because there's some really good work going on. Partners for Progress is a community here in Anchorage that's doing a lot of the reentry work. These folks are doing tremendous work. So it's not just kind of trying to get along with them. It's about how do we continue to advance their efforts, because the work they're doing shows promise. It shows real results. And I want to explore what that looks like with each community in a really big way. And that's where I'm going to take the department in terms of partnering with communities. That's hugely important.
The last thing I want to make sure to ask you before I let you go is kind of one of the more important questions, I think. When you're looking at, like, the national conversation around corrections, how we administer justice in this country, and we talk about prisoners who die in jail who perhaps should not have died in jail, some of the loudest voices are family members of the mentally ill.
Right.
And the reason why is often because they saw jail as a safe place for their mentally ill family member who perhaps could not get services elsewhere because, you know, those services are hard to find for a lot of people. That's not necessarily part of the explicit Department of Corrections mission or responsibilities, but it's almost a social expectation as we read. So kind of understanding that, and that's just me laying the ground, and you can kind of, you know, disagree with that if you'd like. How are we going to move forward with mental illness in this state and from a corrections point of view?
Well, there's, I'll say there's two things, two primary things. So I'm in the middle of another effort that we've just started to explore, which is how we're doing mental health services inside the facilities. And, I mean, I'm looking at part of the problem that I've identified, you know, that I've talked about some, is also the medical care inside the facilities. So I'm looking for expertise, national expertise, on what medical care looks like in, as also well as what mental health care looks like, because prisons are have become the de facto psychiatric hospitals in many states, including ours. And while API is in existence, of course, that there's they don't handle there's more people with significant mental health issues than what are hard beds for, like in the traditional mental health system. So we're going to have these folks with all the demands and issues that come from them. So that's going to be an ongoing effort, but the part of the thing is, again, is how learning from other states and what's happened elsewhere, and are we doing the right thing? And I'll also answer that question and kind of with the second one. It's kind of a little bit, not directly on point, but it kind of is. One of the issues, not only addressing the mental health issues in the state, but just the whole cycle of improvement. How do I get this department to be responsive and hear the voices elsewhere? There's a model in the rest of the country that actually is designed for law enforcement, and there's an association called, I think it's called the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement. It's a sort of a post-Ferguson group that has become more prominent to help make sure that law enforcement agencies, but also correctional agencies, so I'm talking about corrections, they're also involved with correctional agencies too, to provide input and oversight, and you sort of bring them in the door and you help them provide sort of counsel. They know what some of your problems are. They look at maybe the things that are going wrong, and they provide a link to you in the community. And I'm very interested in this model, and here's why, for a couple of reasons. One, that it could be hugely beneficial to me personally, as well as the department, to have people in the community who have an interest in this area, who have maybe provide other oversight on things, and to be able to sort of interact with them and have them say, hey, not for nothing, have you looked at this? Or, hey, you might have a problem here. Or, oh, by the way, we can help you. And to have people sort of help own what some of the issues are. I'm the opposite of a closed-door guy. I want people to know what's happening, right and wrong, inside the system. So this civilian oversight model, which was also designed for law enforcement, is also one that I'm going to be looking at, and I'm going to go to a forum on this, I think, in the summer, that specifically deals with corrections as well. And so how you stand up this sort of advisory group. But not just advisory, you really bring them in where they can really know, you know, all things, so, you know, the dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. And they interact with you over the dirty laundry and what's going on and how can they be involved in helping sort out what the, do we understand what the problem is, and sort of their counsel and perhaps help on the solution. Because I tell you, I don't think all the good ideas reside inside this department, though we have very, very many, you know, very highly talented people that are working here and have been working here, and I hope to bring a few more on to add to the group. But I'm looking outward, not just inward, for solutions. And I think that's the right way to go. And I think that will help carry the day to deal with some of the very, you know, difficult issues we have in front of us.
Well, I'll go ahead and wrap it up here. I just want to go back to where we started. You said you met today with representatives from the Alaska Correctional Officers Association.
Yes.
When considering some of the strong criticism that came from the few lawmakers who did vote against your confirmation, do you see those voices, those lawmakers, hindering the efforts that you're going to need, or hindering efforts that you're going to need cooperation with the legislature on? How do you see that relationship going forward?
In regards to some of the legislature?
Yeah.
Listen to me. Even the people that didn't vote for me said this was more me faced with what they thought was an impossible task in terms of being able to do it. And while I totally respect that on one hand, they said, well, you did the review and now you're running the department. Don't you think that's a problem? And I'm like, yeah, it kind of is a problem on one hand. But the other option is what's the alternative? You know, this is not, wasn't an ideal setup. No, it wasn't. But the alternative is what? Is that by punting and saying, well, now who's going to take the job now? Who's going to do it now? And not that, like, I'm like, you know, like so great or anything, but the reality is I'm here because I think I can actually do something about this. And I don't view anybody who had doubts about that at all that I'm going to have any problems with that. And even with the union, like I said, we met today, and yeah, did some of the things happen during the pre-confirmation sting? Yeah, it did. I mean, I'm human. I'm about moving forward and moving on, and we've made progress already. We've, you know, even internal affairs issue, we have one investigator. We had 2 months ago, we had zero, and that's hugely important to helping us solve problems. And we have people that I brought up on board. That's hugely important going forward. So I'm grateful. I'm extremely grateful, though, that the legislature is as engaged and involved in this issue as they are now. I don't see that as a bad thing at all. It's a good thing. And even if we disagree about what the way you should handle it, the fact that people are engaging over it and wrestling with it now the way I'm wrestling with it, I mean, that's good news. Nothing but good news.